ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Om Agyanat Mirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Shreshtam Manamapi Shachiputra Matra Swarupam Rupam Tasya Gajamurupurim Maturim Goshtavatim Radha Kundam Girivaramaho Radhika Madhvasham Prapto Yasya Pratita Kripaya Shri Gurum Tam. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yatath Pada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagarna Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajiva Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagarna Dalita Shivasha Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay, so already put previously. So, Hare Krishna. So continuing the discussion of the term Shreya, as this appears in Sri Vishnu Sahasranam. Shreya Sriman, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is called Shreya Sriman. It's a very important word to understand, the word Shreya. And to distinguish it from prayer, that's generally as it's distinguished from, but as Gokul Chandra Prabhu pointed out last night, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had found in the teachings of Bhaktivinoda Thakur that prayer and Shreya are the same in Krishna consciousness. It's for our immediate benefit and for our ultimate benefit. I'll read from Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 1, text 31. This is the first of about 10 or 12 times that the word Shreya is employed in Bhagavad Gita. I'll read the verse and Srila Prabhupada's translation and the beginning of Srila Prabhupada's purport. Nacha Shreyo, Nacha, I also don't. Shreyo, Nacha Shreyo Nupashyami. Hatva swajana mahave nakangshe vijayam krishna nacha rajang sukhani cha. He's mixing up here. Arjuna doesn't know the difference between Shreya and prayer. He starts off by saying Shreya, but then he says nakangshe, I don't want. So, the translation, I do not see how any good can come from killing my own kinsmen. In this battle, nor can I, my dear Krishna, desire any subsequent victory, kingdom, or happiness. Then Srila Prabhupada's purport. Srila Prabhupada invokes this verse that I've been commenting on from Bhagavatam. Nate vidu swarata gating hi vishnum. So Srila Prabhupada's purport begins, without knowing that one's self-interest is in Vishnu or Krishna, conditioned souls are attracted by bodily relationships hoping to be happy in such situations. So hoping to be happy is durasha. Ye bahirata manina. Srila Prabhupada summarizing this is, in such a blind conception of life, that's the next line, andhaya tandhaya rupa niyamanas, they forget even the causes of material happiness. Te pishatan triam urudam nibadha. So the Prabhupada's summarizing this verse in the beginning of this purport here. So this term self-interest, Srila Prabhupada uses many, 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 many times. So we can understand that this is pointing out to us that we should be self-interested. To be swarat, to be interested in swarat is considered a bad thing. If you say that someone is acting for their swarat, it means it's something bad, he's acting selfishly. But actually everyone should act for their own self-interest. But the point is that in this material world, to act for one's own self-interest means to, that I was quoting yesterday, nija sukhalagi. What is that? I remember it down. Pape nahidore. I never, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, for the sake of my own happiness, I never feared committing any sinful activities. So this acting for self-interest is good if we understand that our real self-interest is Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada used these terms many, many times. we're enjoined in pursuing pure devotional service. Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana kamadhyanavritam anukulyena Krishna anushilanam bhakti rutama. The pursuit of devotional service on the topmost level is to be free of any personal desire. So this might seem contradictory. We should pursue our self-interest, but without any personal desire. Isn't that contradictory? It's not if we understand that the real goal of life, our real self-interest lies in satisfying Vishnu. Then it's not a personal desire as such. I'll get through to explain that. Gradually get through to all these points. Now the materialistic person, well, there are two levels. Some, they're more pious, not so demoniac, and they'll say, no, you shouldn't, you should act, think of others. Just like children, when they're born, they are the complete personification of selfishness. Isn't it? The whole world exists only for them. If they want something, they just scream, ah! And they go on screaming until they get it. And they grow up a little bit and they become, their unreasonableness goes on. They don't think it's 1 o'clock in the morning and my poor mother is, I already woke her up last time at 11 o'clock. No such thought. Of course, he's not in a sufficiently developed mental state that they can even think of such things. But as they get a little older, then they become a little aware of others also. They don't care for others. If someone has something and they want it, they just want to take it. Then the parents have to teach them, no, you have to share things with your brothers and sisters. Of course, people don't have brothers and sisters. They only have, it's one hamdo hamari ek. We are two, ours is one, like this. And then often the children, it's often seen, not in every case, but it's often seen that single children grow up being very selfish. because they never get out of the baby stage of thinking that my parents are meant for serving me only, and they don't learn to share things with their brothers and sisters because they don't have any brothers and sisters. So living in a big family, it's also very useful or very helpful for, from the beginning, training children that they have to be considerate of others also. And literally, the mother can't be available for every child all the time. So as the children get older, they say you have to sacrifice for the other children also. And often the oldest children in a family of 10 or 13 children, which was normal until fairly recently, then the older children, they also start to help the parents, looking after the younger children. And in a large family especially, you'll find that the youngest child is usually the most selfish, egoistic. This is a generalization, but it's commonly seen because they're the youngest and they get the attention of... They never have to look down to another one and see, oh, now I have to make room for them. Ajamil, the story is there, his youngest child was Narayana, so he was his special child, his pet child, we say. So overcoming this self-interest is understood to be a sign of being a mature person or a civilized person. And someone who is very selfish, they're a demon, that's all. Someone who doesn't care for others at all. And just, they may even make a show of being helpful to others, considerate of others, but they're always calculating. It's all very carefully calculated in their mind. They'll be, just like this book, the origin of all these self-help, self-improvement books. It's a multi-billion-dollar industry, this self-help, or personality development. The mother of them all is how to win friends and influence people. The whole idea is that you pretend to be nice to people, and then they'll help you, and you'll fulfill your desires. That's what it is. And the other one, the mother of all. Well, if you say one is the father, one is the mother, then the Think and Grow Rich is another book. And then out of the, just you have to really concentrate on it, then you can grow rich. So for such a person, growing rich, they consider is their self-interest. And then some of the people who grow rich, then they try to make them, after exploiting people so much, to grow rich, because unless one follows the dharmic way of being a kshatriya or a vaishya, to be very rich, to become very rich means you have to exploit people like anything. So how is it dharmic for a kshatriya or vaishya to be very rich? Because they amass wealth and then yagyartat karmano neatra. It's all offered, the wealth is offered in yagya. It's not for personal sense gratification. Of course, that idea will be there because conditioned souls. But if everything is offered in yagya, then it becomes dharmic. So pious vaishyas up to the present day, here in India, they understand, I have to give in charity. They may not even understand why, but they think we have to give in charity. And even you see someone like Bill Gates, a very rich person, and he opens some foundation or something. But that's just another way to cheat the tax man and cheat people and this and that. But at least, but it has also the very important function of making him look good, even though, dare I say it, he's not good. Well. All right. Anyway, he's not as good as he's trying to make himself look out to be. I've not got anything personally against Bill Gates. I'm sure he's pleasant chap. Not completely sure. Anyway, this Swartha Buddhi, the idea of I, me, and mine, aham mama, aham mameti. This is the essence of materialistic consciousness. Aham mama, you all, well, maybe not all of you know that, comes in the verse. What is that verse? How does it begin? Pungsastriya mituni. So, love, love, love. Love is so wonderful. Pungsastriya mituni bhavame tantayora ho hridaya grantima hu hu. Ato griha kshetra sutapta vitaya janasya moho yamahammameti. So this love, oh, I saw this beautiful girl, I fell in love. We don't find any young men, or old men for that matter, falling in love with 85-year-old, physically handicapped, fully wrinkled old women. How is it they only fall in love with young women, especially pretty women? Why is that? It's maybe the love, it's got some other motive also. It's not just, I love you, I'm so... So it's the... That attraction is there between male and female. And then that knot is formed between them. They're tied up in the wedding ceremony, in the Hindu wedding ceremony. They're literally tied up. But the knot is... The hearts are tied. They become... Of course, in the modern age, it's just... marry, get divorced, get married again, and try through to... When they're about 70 years old, they finally find the real woman I really wanted to love. And she's already been through 25 husbands also. And then you finally find out, then you're dead anyway. So this attraction between male and female is the cause of bondage in this material world, by which one thinks in terms of my home, my wife, my children, my family, my possessions, my society, my country, and in this way one is bewildered in thinking in terms of aham mama, I, me, and mine. My self-interest is in me. Me, 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 and my. So, some people have considered, well, we should go beyond this. This isn't very good. I mean, even materialistic people, many of them, they have the idea that, well, actually we should be ethical. We should consider what is right and what is proper. What is really our interest? What is actually our interest to get lots of food and money? Some people might say so. But even materialistic people who are not completely gross, they may be very thoughtful philosophers in Western philosophy. They have... It's generally accepted that there are four major branches of philosophy. Epistemology, which means how do we understand anything anyway? Ontology, what is the essence of anything and everything? What is reality? What is the truth? And then logic, which is a tool of philosophy, and ethics, or more precisely, axiology. Okay, translate that into Telugu. You know the word for axiology? Really? Well, probably most English speakers don't know the word axiology also. It's a technical term. So it's roughly translated well, it well, ethics is part of it, you could say. It's what makes something good, or what makes something desirable, what makes something valuable, which branches over into ethics, because what, how should we act? What is the best way that we should act? And then it comes into all kinds of complex discussions between, is something valuable intrinsically in and of itself, or is it valuable because it helps us to attain something which is valuable? So for instance, if we bring a 2,000 rupee note, what is its intrinsic value? Not very much. 2,000 rupee note. So it doesn't have much value in itself, but because the government has empowered that piece of paper, and because it's an accepted convention that this 2,000 rupee note you can exchange for all kinds of things which can give you value, just like for someone who likes to smoke cigarettes. How much is a packet of cigarettes? Anyone has any idea? I don't think, probably none of you have any idea. Huh? Lowest, 10. 10, is it a packet of 10? 60 or 70 rupees. Well, that's a tough one. Okay, Gurukul children, divide. What's 70 rupees into 2,000? How many packets of cigarettes can you get? A little less than 30, I would say. So, okay, so that's, it's got value. You can't say a 2,000 rupee note doesn't have any value. But it's not the value that it, it's not the piece of paper, but it's the value that's been ascribed to it. That you can get something that you want, or you can buy, how much is dal, tuar dal? Still 80 rupees, still. It went up a few years ago, shot up from 30 rupees to 80 rupees, and it's remained there ever since. Okay, Gurukul children, this is an easier one. How many kilos of dal can you get if it's 80 rupees? 2,000, come on, that's easy. $80 times 2 is $160. Okay, so times 20. Yeah, it's approximately 25. Okay. So it has value because you can buy so much dal. Now that's something actually valuable. Rice and dal. So you could, something, you could say the dal has intrinsic value. You can directly use it to eat it, and you're required to eat. But then you can say, well, it just, if the dal is just sitting there, it doesn't have any value. But then when you cook it, then it has value because it helps to nourish the body. So these are the kind of things philosophers talk about. Is it valuable intrinsically? Yes. No, not exactly, because you have to cook it, and then it becomes. And they'll go on and talk, and they'll use all technical terms. And in the meantime, anyone who's got any sense will just go out and buy some and cook it and not worry about all these things. But anyway, that's what philosophers do, how they waste their times. And then there are different answers. What is actually valuable? Remember, we're discussing here Shreya, the ultimate benefit. So, pleasure, anandam, The word pleasure doesn't really translate. Pleasure, it really means, I guess we could say, manasantosham. Something like this, pleasure. There's the word pleasure in English, at least as far as I understand, it gives the idea that it's more like the yehi sangsvarsha ja bhoga, the interaction of the senses, that gives pleasure. But pleasure doesn't necessarily give happiness. Happiness is a state of mind. Pleasure, yeah. Just like the man is being chased by an elephant and he's running and running and then he slips off a cliff. And he catches, there's a tree just above and the roots are hanging down. So he holds onto the root. So he's saved. And the elephant standing up above him, wanting to kill him. He's saved. Saved. Now I'm safe. You're not really safe because there's an elephant. So he looks down. It's a long fall and there's some poisonous snakes down there below. And he looks, I say, at least I can hold on here. I'll be okay. Then he sees there's a rat gnawing away at the root that he's holding on to. Meantime, something lands on his nose. He looks up to see what it is. There's a beehive above and there are drops of honey dropping from above. Honey, puts out his tongue. This honey is so wonderful. It's so nice. I'm so fortunate. I never tasted such nice honey in my life. Pleasure. He got some pleasure. In the meantime, he's in a very dangerous situation. So this false pleasure. But the hedonists, how do you translate that into? Indriya Sukhavadis, you could say, something like that. They think that to enjoy the senses is the goal of life. Hedonist. There was an actual group of philosophers in ancient Greece who were, they're the Epicureans. They're followers of Epicurus, a Greek philosopher. Of course, there's Charvak also, yavat jivet sukha jivet, renankrit va gritang vipet, yavat jivang sukham jivet, bhasma bhutas, what is it? Bhasma bhutasya dehasya, kuta va punar agamana bhavet. Maybe the highest goal of life is to get some brain and be able to remember some shlokas. Don't worry for it. Don't be too concerned, because if you think I'll have good brain and I'll be able to remember all the shlokas, then you have to be born again. So better not to desire anything except pure love of Krishna. Anyway, that verse of Charvaka which I just messed up. The meaning is that beg, steal, or borrow, get ghee. Sounds like good philosophy. Huh? Live happily. As long as you live, live happily. Because bhasma bhutasya dehasya, the body will become ashes. And king puna agamano bhavet. Who says we come back again? We don't come back again. So we never saw anyone come back again. Did you ever see anyone? You ever saw anyone come back again? No, so that means they never came back, right? Proof, scientific proof. So hedonists. For pragmatists, there's another group of philosophers. Pragmatists. Yeah, how do you translate that? Vyavaharikavadis, something like that. American group of philosophers, that their idea is that, well, you don't have to worry too much about all these big philosophical discussions, just get on with life and be practical. They're not exactly the same as hedonists, but just in philosophy, you'll just see what works. So satisfaction, growth, all this kind of thing. Let's do what practical. For followers of another philosophical Kantian, Kantanugami, something like that. Followers of Kant. Goodwill. Let there be goodwill to all. Let there be peace on earth and goodwill to all men. Something, I think it's from the Bible. It's something they say at Christmas, and then the rest of the year they just kill each other. But at least at Christmas. Let there be peace on earth and goodwill to all men. And they used to, in the First World War, the Germans and the British, they'd be sitting in trenches with their machine guns facing each other. If anyone popped their head up, they'd get their head shot off. But then on Christmas Day, they all had a holiday. The English and the Germans were all singing and dancing and getting drunk together, and the next day they went back to shooting each other, like that. So goodwill, and as the atheists like Richard Dawkins point out, that you don't have to believe in God to have goodwill. You can have goodwill to others without believing in God. Then there are other philosophers such as pluralists, and I don't know exactly or even slightly what their philosophy means, although I guess it's different to singularists or monists. Now I see. They say that there are any number of intrinsically valuable things. It's not just one thing, but all kinds of different things. And then there are subjective things. What you might think one thing is good, and someone else thinks something else is good. So if you think something's good, okay. And whatever you think good, if one thing is good for you, okay. Live and let live. Jio or Jine Do, as is painted on the back of many trucks. You'll see, they have different slogans on the back of trucks. Live and let live. So, all right. Just, everyone have their own idea. Of course, someone's idea might be that in my philosophy, hitting you on the head with a hammer is good. And your philosophy might be, hell, I don't accept that. So then philosophies come into clashes with each other. And that's particularly seen in the religious world. Islam and Hinduism come into clash with each other. Hindus say killing cows is very bad, and Muslims say, no, killing cows is very good. And there's a clash because of different outlook or different opinions. And then, what else is there? Cognitive theories of value. Okay, translate that into Telugu. Maybe you can just take a break for a while I read this stuff. Cognitive theories of value assert that ascriptions of value function logically as expressions of feeling. Okay, you all understood that. Let's go on a bit. Or prescriptions or commendations. According to naturalists, expressions such as intrinsically good can be analyzed as referring to natural or non-ethical properties, such as being pleasant. Moore famously denied this, holding that good refers to a simple, unanalyzable, non-natural property. That's actually quite not bad, that one. Good refers to a simple, unanalyzable, non-natural property, which is what we say. If the simple, non-analyzable, non-natural property is Krishna Bhakti. He probably didn't say that, but he's pointing to transcendence. And anyway, this is the kind of things that philosophers do, which is why you don't find much funding in the universities for philosophy, and you find big departments of engineering, because you can do something with engineering if you can get a job. You can build a bridge or so many, there's all kinds of engineering. So that's not very philosophy doesn't seem to be very practical, but just by a quick look at what I found on the internet about axiology, or about what's really good, you can find out that people have all different kinds of ideas, no fixed idea. And they all fall into the category of Nati Vidu Swartakating Hi Vishnam. That's it. Philosophy department, just shove it all in. Okay, Nati Vidu Swartakating Hi Vishnam. That's okay. It's all under all their categories of philosophy. You can put it all under one category. Nati Vidu Swartakating Hi Vishnam. Do Bhuto Sargo Lokesmin. Daiva Asura Evacha. Vishnu Bhakta Smito Daiva Asuras Tadviparyaya. There are basically two kinds of people in this world, the demons and the devotees. And demons are devotees of Vishnu, non-devotees of Vishnu. And the, demons and demigods. Yeah, and demigods or deva, godly people, means those who are devotees of Vishnu. I just was talking about modern Western philosophy and some of their ideas. There are so many ideas. Philosophy is such a subject, as philosophers like to say, Western philosophers, that the more you study it, the less you understand it. The less you understand, and that means it's not really philosophy at all, because philosophy should help you to actually understand. Self-interest. One thing they could analyze is that, well, self-interest. But then you see people, not everyone acts for self-interest. People will give their life for their country. Or it just came in the news, in France there was some terrorist attack and some gendarme or French policeman. I only saw the headlines, so I can't give you all the details, but somehow or other he sacrificed his life for, and someone saved someone else. Oh, I remember a few years ago, a god sister of mine wrote to me, and her son years ago had died. What it was, they were with his girlfriend in Canada, I think it was. They were exchanging sweet nothings, courting on the rail line track, which is a pretty stupid place, at night. And somehow they didn't hear the train till it was right upon them, and he pushed her out of the way, and in that split second, he could have got out of the way, but he pushed her out of the way and he got killed by the oncoming train. So she was happy that he sacrificed his life. He was so good. But on the other hand, she was very unhappy that he had died and she wasn't getting over it even after so many years. So there are, we see that the husband sacrifices for the wife, goes out to work hard all day, and the wife sacrifices for the husband. People act for the benefit of others. Why do they do that? That's a subject of discussion by philosophers and psychologists. This was also discussed by a philosopher long, long ago, here in Bharatavarsha. His name was Yajnavalkya. And what he said to one of his two wives, Maitreyi, the more materialistic one, is recorded in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. And he describes why people are dear to each other. Why is the husband dear to the wife? Why? There was one Western feminist anthropologist who came to India some years ago. I read something she wrote, and she would ask all the women in the village, I believe it was in UP, like this, why do you love your husband? And many of them gave the reply, because he's my husband. And she thought that's a really stupid reply, because she's an educated American feminist. But Yajnavalkya says that it's not for the sake of the husband that the husband is dear. You don't actually love him for his sake, but it's for the sake of the Atma. So what? Now the word Atma has various meanings, but basically it can be taken that you love the husband because for your own sake. Because you may say, no, well, I'm sacrificing so much. But you do that because you feel satisfaction in sacrificing. Therefore, you love the husband. And the same thing, the wife, oh, my wife is so dear to me. Wife so dear to me. It's for the sake of the self that the wife is dear, not for her sake. And he goes on and on, not for the sake of sons, our sons dear, but sons are dear for the sake of the self. And in the translation I've printed out here, self is given with a capital S, which is probably on the idea that the Mayavadi idea that Atma, Atma, I am Atma, and Atma means everything, God. Not for the sake of wealth is wealth dear, but wealth is dear for the sake of the self. Just like, for instance, someone has money, and then you become attached, because it's my money. And then if you spend it, then you're no longer attached to it. If someone steals it, then you still feel attached to it, because you think it's mine, it's actually mine, it belongs to me. So you feel attached to it. But okay, so say you have 10 lakhs of rupees, and you're thinking about it, it's mine, you become attached to it. If you hear someone else has got 10 lakhs of rupees, you're not attached to that. So it's not for the money that you're attached to the money, but because the sake of the self, because of the sense that it's mine. Not for the sake of Brahmin. Hood is the Brahmin dear. So if a Brahmin is a Brahmin, he's very attached to being a Brahmin. But no, it's because I'm a Brahmin. The Shudra doesn't, what does he care? He offers respect, but he doesn't have that sense of Brahminhood because he's not a Brahmin. Same thing, Kshatriya, Yajnavalkya says. What about the whole world? Vasundhaiva Kutumbakam. Everyone in the world is my family member. Why? Because I feel good by thinking like that. I'm paraphrasing here, Yajnavalkya. What about the gods in heaven? You're worshipping the gods with great feeling, because you're thinking they'll give me some satisfaction, or I feel satisfied in worshipping them. And all living beings, and everything is, if we feel any sense of dearness, it's all for the sake, what I get out of it. What I feel to be priya. This comes to prayer. And we're discussing, if you remember, the discussion is Shreya, what is for our ultimate value. Now, this same idea that one loves anything for our own sake, that same or similar discussion comes up very interestingly in the discussion between Parikshit Maharaj and Shukadev Goswami, where it's virtually a paraphrase of this Brihadaranyaka Upanishad statement, but, all right, you'll hear it. Parikshit very intelligently asked, he's always examining everything, he asked Shukadev, that you see, Brahma, he stole the cowherd boys and the calves, and Krishna reproduced the same forms. Not only the same forms, but they had exactly the same, all the same detail. If you went to their thumbprints, you'd find the same thumbprint. And they all had the same personality, mentality, same relationship with everyone else, so when they went home, their parents couldn't detect these are different boys. But the parents they started loving their boys more than their own boys. And the calves, Krishna took the form of the calves, and the cows became more affectionate to they thought it was the same calf, but actually it was Krishna in the form of a calf. And they became excessively attached. So Parikshit asked, how could the cowherd women have developed for Krishna, someone else's son, such unprecedented pure love, love that they never felt even for their own children? It's very strange. Someone may be a loving mother, and then if someone else's son comes into the family, and then why would they start loving them more than their own children? They know it's someone else. Well, we don't know it's someone else, but why should they have? Really, it really was just crazy, practically, how they were so much in love. One time the cowherd men had their cows on top of Govardhan Hill, and Krishna and the cowherd boys were with the calves at the bottom of Govardhan Hill. And then all of a sudden the cows saw the calves below, and these were older calves, and the new calves were with the cows. You understand that, right? Because the cows have one calf after another, and the older calves are with being herded by Krishna and the cowherd boys, and the new calves are with the cows on the top of Govardhan Hill. So the cows saw the older calves, and we're just talking how usually the younger child is the most dear. But when they saw the older calves, they left their new calves and ran down over the rough rocks of Govardhan Hill to be with their new calves. And the cowherd men, they were trying to stop them, and they became really upset. Come on, we're cowherd men, we can't even control our cows. So they became very upset. It's very embarrassing for them that they can't control the cows. And they're all very angry, and they chased the cows down. When they came down, they saw their cowherd boys, who are their sons, and then they forgot all about their anger, and they started embracing their sons. And what's going on? I mean, this is unusual. Usually people love their sons, but not that in the middle of... The sons are at work, child labor, in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The sons are looking after the calves. And the cows, they're supposed to go separately. But they became... It's just excessive, not normally seen. So Parikshit asked, what's going on? How is that? And Shukadev Goswami answered, for every created being, the dearmost thing is certainly his own self. Right? Same thing, Yajnavalkya says. The dearness of everything else, children, wealth, and so on, is due only to the dearness of the self. So he's not giving a direct answer here. He's giving some philosophical points. For this reason, the embodied soul is self-centered. He is more attached to his own body and self than to his so-called possessions like children, wealth, and home. Then he continues, talking about Dehatma Vadinam. He says, everyone is attached to the Atma. Shukadev says, which is exactly the same which Yajnavalkya says. Then he says, Dehatma Vadi, but those who identify the body as the self. Now here's important distinctions coming in. For persons who think that the body is the self, those things whose importance lies only in their relationship to the body are never as dear as the body itself. Did you get the photo? Photo? Yeah, yeah. You didn't look up the verses in advance. Okay. Lies only in their relationship to the body and are never as dear as the body itself. That's why a person will try to protect their possessions if their house is on fire, but many times, if they see it's too bad, they'll save themselves, their body. They'll try and save their possessions, but if it's a choice between saving their possessions and saving their own body, they'll see they'll let the whole house burn and everything within it, but at least I'm alive. So all the possessions are dear because it's my possessions, But they are dehatmavadi. They think of the body as the self. So they want to save the body more than anything. So if we go through the Sanskrit words, they're very interesting, but it would take a long time. You can go through yourself. But I'll just say, deho pi mamata. This sense of mamata, it belongs to me, which is considered that's a common name, girl's name. Mamata Banerjee is the chief ministress of West Bengal. Good luck to them, Bengalis. It's considered good for a woman to have a sense of mamata. She loves her children. So that's considered very good. But here, so the sense of possessiveness, mamata, possessiveness. In English, this is also not a very good word. If you say someone is possessive, it means they want to exert their control, especially if you're possessive of people. They're my people. I want to control them. Or it's my property. You don't want to share it with anyone else. Possessive. You're very cling on to many things. There's one kind of psychological disorder, which I can't remember the name of, collecting phobia or something like that. You go in someone's house and you can't get in the house because it's full of all kinds of things they collect. If they buy a sewing machine, they won't throw away the box. They'll keep the box and they'll keep all boxes. And just everything, every space is full of all kinds of things because they never want to throw anything away. It's a kind of phobia, possessive. It's in my possession. Why should I throw it away? At least in Tamil Nadu, once a year, they throw everything out. Do they do that here also? On that, there's one bogi. They throw all the junk out for 1 year and then burn it. Burn it means the day after bogi, they can't bring it back into the house and think, well, maybe I shouldn't have thrown it away. They make a big pile and burn it. It's gone, finished. There may be, maybe some people bring the ash. You never know. They might bring the ash. But the idea is just, you over the year, I'll become attached to so many useless things and just throw it all out. So this sense of possessiveness comes due to the body. So, translation of this verse. If a person comes to the stage of considering the body mine instead of me, Srila Prabhupada always pointed out, isn't it? That you don't say me body. You say my body. So you just actually, everyone intrinsically knows that I'm not the body. So he will certainly not consider the body as dear as his own self. After all, even as the body is growing old and useless, one's desire to continue living remains strong. Yeah, for one who identifies with the body, then even when the body is growing old and it's wearing out, and it's actually a sign from Krishna that you should get serious about spiritual life, but he's just trying to keep it young. And you'll see old men jogging, doing weightlifting, doing sports, as if they're pretending that they're still young when they're not, pretending to themselves. Therefore, Shukadev says, it is his own self that is most dear to every embodied living being, and it is simply for the satisfaction of this self that the whole material creation of moving and non-moving entities exists. Okay, same as Yajnavalkya, right? Shukadev says, and he didn't answer the question of Parikshit yet. Then he says, Krishnam enam avehi tvam atmanam akhila atmanam jagatidhaya sopyatra dehi va bhati mayaya. You should know Krishna to be the original soul of all living entities. For the benefit of the whole universe, he has, out of his causeless mercy, appeared as an ordinary human being. He has done this by the strength of his internal potency. So Krishna is Atmatma. He is the Atma of all Atmas. Then, Vastuta, definitely, in fact, those in this world who understand Lord Krishna as he is, see all things, whether stationary or moving, as manifest forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such enlightened persons recognize no reality apart from the Supreme Lord Krishna. The original unmanifested form of material nature is the source of all material things, and the source of even that subtle material nature is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. What then could one ascertain to be separate from him? So if we're enlightened, we see that everything rests in Krishna. We ourselves, we consider ourselves Atma, we are Atma, but instead of being identifying with the body, with the self, then if we identify that we are connected with Krishna, then naturally Krishna becomes dear to us. And then the next verse, Shukdev Goswami, he ends this philosophical discussion by giving some advice. Well-known verse, Samashrita ye padda pallava plavang mahatpadang punya yasho marare he bhavam buddhiya vatsa padang parang padang 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 yadvipadang vipadang nate sham. For those who have accepted the boat of the lotus feet of the Lord, who is the shelter of the cosmic manifestation and is famous as Murari, the enemy of the Mura demon, the ocean of the material world is like the water contained in a calf's hoofprint. Their goal is Parang Padam Vaikuntha, the place where there are no material miseries, not the place where there is danger at every step. So it's very dangerous to think of anything as being our ultimate goal than Krishna. The result of thinking like that is urudam nibadha. We become very strongly tied in material life. But if we take shelter of Krishna, then we go to the spiritual world. So that's the conclusion of that. And this is all going on the understanding that Shreya, the real Shreya, is Krishna himself. To our self-interest should be directed toward Krishna. And then it's no longer self-interest, because when one identifies oneself wholly and solely as I'm only meant for serving Krishna, and one has no other thought in mind, then there's no selfishness left. It's all, when one understands that Krishna is the Supreme Self, then I'm simply meant for serving. I have the choice to serve him or not. Gopis speaking to Krishna. Please do not. So the gopis, they wanted Krishna as their husband. That's a personal desire, is it? Then they said to Krishna, "Please do not discourage our long cherished desires to have you as our husband." Any intelligent man, person who cares for his own self-interest, reposes all his loving spirit in you. Any intelligent person who cares for his own self-interest reposes his loving spirit in you. So our real self-interest, they say, is that the loving spirit, everyone has the propensity to love. It's the same thing Srila Prabhupada said again and again and again. Everyone has the propensity to love, and therefore, he often gave the example, that people in the Western world, they find it too troublesome to have family and children, but they keep a dog at home, and they love the dog. Because that loving propensity, they want to love. So the gopi said, one should repose that loving spirit in Krishna. Persons who are simply misled by the external energy, who want to be satisfied by false concepts, try to enjoy themselves apart from you. The so-called husband, son, friend, daughter, father and mother are all simply sources of material misery. No one is happy in this material world by having a so-called father, mother, husband, son, daughter and friend. So our real self-interest is in serving Krishna. But they don't know. Natevidu swarthagating hi Vishnu. And it's not really selfish, because in pure Krishna bhakti there is no selfishness, because the desire of the pure devotee is so completely riveted with the desire to serve Krishna that he doesn't have any other thought. Just like the women where they're asked, why do you love your husband? Because my husband. It's not really a question. It's not really something for them to consider. Of course, that's in the material world, but you could say, why does a mother love her son? It's not really a meaningful question. She's not calculating. Why. Well, they may be, actually. He'll grow up and then he'll look after me in old age, but there may be some calculation there. But anyway, as Srila Prabhupada said, the mother's love for the child is the closest to pure love in this world. So that doesn't always apply either, because say in a nomadic tribe where all the people live together, then the children, the parents don't rely on the children to look after them in old age, because the whole group is there for that. But still the mothers look after the children. Why? Why do they do that? It's not really a question. It's just so expected and normal and natural that it's not really a question to ask at all. Why is water wet? Well, that's what water means. It's just like that. It's not really a question to ask at all. So as Srila Prabhupada writes, the ultimate goal of progress is Krishna. People do not know this. Therefore, the association of devotees and a bona fide spiritual master are important. So we should know this. Shreya. Shreya means Krishna. Shreyas. A real goal of life has to be Krishna. We may say, for instance, that our career is our devotional service. But what is our goal of life? The ultimate goal of life is to sing and dance with Krishna in the spiritual world. Why? We'll be happy? Yeah, well, we're always told that. Chant Hare Krishna and be happy. But the real secret to happiness is understanding that if we can make Krishna happy. But if the gopis, they like to sing and dance with Krishna because they know that Krishna is pleased by their singing and dancing with him. And they also become very happy. They get great pleasure in that. But because their pleasure is completely synchronized with Krishna's pleasure, then there's no personal desire. There's no mundane desire whatsoever. And the story of Krishna's headache, that demonstrates that. Which devotee will cure Krishna's headache by giving the dust from his feet? None were ready to do it, only the gopis. Don't you know you'll go to hell? Yeah, but go to hell, but anyway, Krishna, his headache will be cured. So, I don't know where that story's from, but anyway, Srila Prabhupada told it. So the point is that is pure devotion. That we have to aspire for. Therefore, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, we find the inner crux of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. He talks about gopi anugatya, following the gopis. Of course, that requires some level of qualification. One cannot do so if one has any personal desire. So, the guide to life for the devotees, the guide to the Srimad Bhagavatam is Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and he gives us the entrance into all these, into the Bhakti Rasamrita. How can we enter the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and be an aquatic within that ocean, and not like the Mayavadis who they want to merge into the ocean? But Rupa Goswami says the devotees, they're like aquatics who swim in the ocean. How can we enter that ocean? It begins, Anyabhilashita Shunyam Jnana Kamadhyana Vritam Anukulyena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhaktiruttama. Selflessness in Krishna's service, acting in a way that is pleasing to Him, that will give us entrance into the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the ocean of nectar, of loving exchanges with Krishna. And we can say, why is there any charm in stories, novels, cinema? There's a huge industry in India, isn't it? Cinema industry. In Hyderabad, is it? They have the studios like Bollywood. What's it called here? Tollywood. Yeah. So it's a big business. Why? What's there? What's the attraction? There's some rasa, is there, no? Some exchange. Someone kills someone else. That's a common scene. And that's, what's that? Bhayanaka rasa. No. Vibhatsa rasa. Fear, the rasa of fear, the rasa of something. They have horror movies. Someone with all horrible face. And that's vibhatsa, or something disgusting. And then, of course, the most famous is the Shringar rasa, the love, and the violins playing in the background. There's always, it doesn't happen in real life, it only happens in the movies, that when young man looks at the young girl and there's some violin starts playing in the background. It's rasa, but it's not bhakti rasa. So it simply ends in disappointment. So why is that? Because everyone wants the rasa without giving. They want it for themselves. I will enjoy. But we understand Krishna is the enjoyer. He's Rasa Raja. He's the enjoyer. So we act so that he feels some pleasure. And then secondarily we feel pleasure. But if we try to make it primarily for ourselves, then it doesn't work. So, Shreya, all our real interest is in Krishna, and he is always enjoying with Shri, he's Shreya, Shriman, that's all in him. We can take part in that, we cannot take his part, but we cannot take his role, but we can share in his pleasure by trying to act in a way that gives him pleasure. It's a very simple principle. But we're accustomed since time immemorial to think otherwise, so therefore we have to hear again and again and again. Nate vidu swarta gatim hi vishnum. They don't know that the real goal of life is Vishnu. Durasha. You may think, well, we don't know, but anyway, you can enjoy this material. Durasha. Don't even bother trying. No hope. You're not going to be happy in this world. Just surrender to Krishna. Hare Krishna. Any question about this? Oh, I see. Yeah. It's just after. Okay, I'll move on. Hare Krishna.